The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
The following is a special presentation of The World Tomorrow.
There's your blast from the past, a shorter cold open than usual, which is why I didn't quite get around to straightening my tie out. So hopefully it's not a distraction before the next clip that we play. Speaking of clips, we've got a lot lined up from that show. Many of you are old enough to remember The World Tomorrow. That's Herbert Armstrong's. That's his flagship program. It started out on radio back in the 1930s, went into television in the 1950s, and by the end of his life, he died on this day, 39 years ago, January 16th, 1986. And right there at the end of his life, he was going out to millions upon millions of people every weekend with this program, The World Tomorrow. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. Lots and lots to get to. You can get to the live video stream of this program at trumpetdaily.com or at the Rumble channel. Just go to rumble.com/trumpetdaily. Lots of things I didn't tidy up before we started, but that's okay. You're patient people, and we appreciate that. If you'd like to leave some feedback, by the way, you can email the program, td@thetrumpet.com. So I want to get to the history of that legacy. The legacy of Herbert Armstrong, his ministry, it continues through this work. And it's hard to believe, as I was telling the students, they were able to watch a behind the work film from 1997 that was about, well, that was the year we went to court to fight for Mystery of the Ages. This is the book that Herbert Armstrong was able to hand out to the sophomore class at Ambassador College in September of 1985. I mean, the people that received this book, those sophomores at the time, they're I guess 58, 59 years old today. How many of them remember? You wonder, because there's been a great falling away from the truth. You can get back on track, however, if you get back into Mystery of the Ages. And of course, there's lots of other literature that we fought for during that 6 years of litigation. But as I was telling the students this morning, how important is this history? I mean, this is our history. This is spiritual Israel we're talking about. And it is important to look back, and we will, just after we get to a couple of important news items, another one that we've produced. He was right. Of course, that has Herbert Armstrong on the cover as well. His ministry lasted for well over 50 years, and he was spot on. And there's this article this morning, Project Syndicate, and it's just astounding to think about how many of these statements appeared in the Plain Truth magazine or have been talked about in the Trumpet magazine these past 30 plus years. It talks about the Middle East being realigned. These major prophetic events. What would Herbert Armstrong be saying today if he was alive today? He would be sounding the alarm. He would be crying aloud, as it says in Isaiah 58 and verse 1. That's what he did from the very beginning. And his work started in the smallest possible way, a mustard seed beginning, as Jesus spoke about in Matthew 13. And he had people basically shouting him down. You're not going to make anything of your ministry. You're not going to get very far. He writes about that in the autobiography. I mean, we can set you up with quite a library if you want to get into this history and know just how significant that ministry was, who Herbert Armstrong was in prophecy, prophesied to come in these last days. He did. He sounded the alarm. He was the prophesied Elijah, and that Elijah work continues. This Project Syndicate piece, just listen to all of these statements, and then be reminded, this is just a secular news source. That's it. They say this year was always going to be important for the European Union. Think about the signature prophecy that Herbert Armstrong proclaimed, really for the duration of his ministry. This is going to be a significant year for Europe. That's what this article is bringing out. It says here, the start of a new EU Commission mandate, a relatively new European Parliament, and a change at the helm of the European Council. It says, but recent developments, listen to this, including the collapse of the German government. I mean, you've heard about a lot of these things on our program even recently. The collapse of the German government, the beginning of coalition negotiations led by the far right in Austria, the end of Russian gas flows to the EU via Ukraine, and Donald Trump's victory in the U.S. presidential election have raised the stakes significantly. We've got to brace ourselves for the acceleration of fulfilled prophecy in Europe. If Herbert Armstrong was here, he was right. He was right about what we're seeing. I mean, this article talks about how, well, you know, we need to be careful about inviting new members in, and that aligns perfectly with what we've said about the downsizing of that union to where it's the prophesied 10 kings. They're having to raise the stakes significantly because of all that's been happening just in the last few months. It says Europe confronts a volatile geopolitical environment beyond the grinding war in Ukraine. A violent reconfiguration is underway in the Middle East. And we've told you all about that based upon Psalm 83. The reconfiguration and how it's been shaken. We'll get to the ceasefire that's in the news regarding Israel and Hamas. That's a pretty shocking development as well. Richard Palmer had a lot to say about that in the morning brief that we email out. In any event, it talks about the fall of Assad in Syria, and you could add to that what we've said about Hamas, Hezbollah, Israel, Iran. All these developments demand responses from the EU. Such efforts will be all the more important and more complicated with Trump in the White House. See, they see the orange Hitler. You might have seen the article at the front page of thetrumpet.com right now. Zu Gutenberg. Gutenberg calls for militarily united Europe against bully Trump. I mean, this man despises Donald Trump, and a lot of the elites in Europe do, even if they don't say it openly. The arrival of Donald Trump as president next week, that too is accelerating events, prophesied events in the whole of Europe. It says no one should count on the U.S. commitment to support its allies. On the contrary, Trump's promise to end the war in Ukraine immediately upon taking office augurs capitulation to Russia, underscoring the need for increased EU aid for Ukraine and a rapid strengthening of Europe's defense capacity. This is just what Gutenberg's calling for, and we're all over it at thetrumpet.com website. There have been a few slower going developments in this prophesied union. The seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. But now we're seeing the pace pick up significantly. And that's what Project Syndicate's writing about. Look, we've got to respond to this. We can't rely on U.S. support. We can't rely on NATO going forward. We've got to have our own European military. Says what Europe must do is resort to indiscriminate protectionism, including against China. In fact, the EU needs a China strategy. Think of the Mart of Nations prophecy. That's in Psalm, 23 or Isaiah 23. They're going to align together in opposition to the United States, freezing out the U.S. on trade. It says here, the EU needs a China strategy that prevents it from being swept into an all-encompassing confrontation and strikes a balance between maintaining mutually beneficial relations, preserving foundational alliances and defending the international order from attempts to destabilize it. It says further on, a final imperative for the EU in 2025 is to reform its institutional structures and decision-making processes. Wow. I mean, these are urgent times that we're living in. We're seeing prophecies being fulfilled, prophecies that Herbert Armstrong was talking about in some cases 80 or 90 years ago, a signature prophecy at that regarding the reemergence of the Holy Roman Empire. One last time. We have, I mean, you think of the Holy Roman Empire in prophecy booklet. You think of Mystery of the Ages, as I mentioned a moment ago, the United States and Britain in prophecy. He was right. Just think about how God has educated his family, how God educated those viewers of The World Tomorrow, those readers of the Plain Truth magazine, and those that continue watching The Key of David, reading The Trumpet magazine, among other things. Just again, in the spirit of these prophecies that were being fulfilled yesterday, I referred to the silencing of the dear leader, Barack Obama, and then just the Democrat Party, and how, you know, they come into these hearings. A couple days ago, it was Hegseth. Yesterday, Pam Bondi, I guess she's up again today. And these people that Trump has selected, I mean, they're prepared. they're not taking it, the attacks, I mean. They're hurling it right back at some of these Democrat senators. It shows that the Democrat Party, it just doesn't have the power that it had even a few months ago. And then you read this Project Syndicate piece and they're bracing themselves for the arrival of Trump, Orange Hitler. Some pretty earth-shaking developments, for sure. But just following on this point about the powerless Democrat Party, this is what Jesse Waters had to say last night on his show, Clip 9.
And so far, all the nominees have presented strong, smart, and principled cases for their nominations. The Republican Party's unified around them. It's refreshing, isn't it? But Democrats keep getting caught flat-footed. Nothing seems to be working. Schumer promised fireworks, but all of his foot soldiers are getting outfoxed. Schumer said Republicans were going to suffer brand damage after these hearings. But we've just seen Senate Democrats embarrass themselves one after the other. The Democrat machine is broken. It's leaderless. The donors are disgusted. The media is collapsing. The big tech billionaires are switching sides. And Hollywood's on fire. They're fighting for their lives. We're starting to see that without a well-funded and well-oiled propaganda machine and cancel culture enforcers, the party doesn't have the power, the discipline, or the narratives they need to survive. Trump's election has shattered that machine into a million pieces, and we have no idea how long it's going to take for them to put it back together.
The Democrat machine is broken, he says there. It's leaderless. There's no power. As I said on yesterday's show, I mean, how did this happen? How did this happen? You've got the Daily Mail's talking about how Obama may be ready to divorce his wife. She's not appearing for any of these special engagements. So all these rumors swirling on social media. I mean, it just goes bad. It goes from bad to worse for the dear leader. It's stunning to watch. It's electrifying to watch because, well, we've played the montages for you before. My father talking about Obama having to be silenced. God's going to have to move him out of the way to clear the way for the Jeroboam administration. All of this has happened. And now you see how Europe is reacting, how they're responding to this new administration. A very different administration. This ceasefire agreement, Richard Palmer wrote about this in the morning brief. It says, Israel is being pushed into another dangerous compromise with Hamas, apparently by Donald Trump's incoming team. It's been interesting to watch just from the political angles over here. The fake president getting up yesterday and taking credit for this negotiation, this ceasefire. And then you've got Donald Trump and his people coming in. They want a political victory as well. But look at how if Israel, I mean, there's some reports saying that Israel hasn't even agreed to this yet. But in any event, they're under pressure. Because you've heard Donald Trump. It's in this montage we put together. You've got some comments here from the fake president, you know, patting himself on the back. And then you have those comments from Donald Trump not that long ago where he said, if those hostages aren't released by the time I get into power, well, it's going to be explosive. Let's just put it that way. I won't use the term he used. Play clip 10.
And the Secretary of State. Let's listen.
Good afternoon. It's a very good afternoon, because at long last, I can announce a ceasefire and a hostage deal has been reached between Israel and Hamas.
When it comes to the involvement of President-elect Trump's team, it has been absolutely critical in getting this deal over the line. And it's been critical because, obviously, as I stand here today, this administration's term in office will expire in 5 days. And one of the things that we have always said about this deal is that when you get from stage one to stage two, that the United States, Egypt, and Qatar are the guarantors of this deal. And Egypt and Qatar will push Hamas to stay at the bargaining table and to get from stage one to stage two, and the United States will push Israel to stay at the bargaining table to get from phase one and phase two. So obviously those are promises we cannot make on behalf of the United States for any longer than the next 5 days. We of course thank the Trump team for working with this on this ceasefire agreement. We think it's important that they were at the table.
This deal will hold.
I'm confident. Thank you.
Folks, credit for this, Mr. President, you or Trump?
Is that a joke? Oh, thank you.
Those hostages aren't back. I don't want to hurt your negotiation. If they're not back by the time I get into office, all will break out in the Middle East.
Can you elaborate?
And it will not be good for Hamas, and it will not be good, frankly, for anyone. All will break out. I don't have to say anymore, but that's what it is.
So here they are bickering over who gets the credit. But what must Israel be thinking? Phase one of the new ceasefire deal starts Sunday. Fighting would stop for 6 weeks, and Hamas would release 33 of the nearly 100 remaining hostages, just a third of them. They're not even, Hamas has been decimated. And they're not even returning all of the hostages. It says here, Israel would withdraw from densely populated areas of Gaza, allow in hundreds of aid trucks, and release hundreds of Palestinian prisoners. Some of these prisoners in jail for life. So Hamas, basically, if these terms are correct, they survive. What is Israel thinking? And then you wonder what the incoming Donald Trump administration is thinking. This is setting the stage for something pretty bad to happen down the road. We'll see how long that it takes. I mean, his first term, Donald Trump was a pretty good friend of Israel. But to give back after October 7, to give back more terrorists to Hamas, to not even get all of the hostages, they've still got nearly 100. I mean, this is stunning. Once phase one has begun, negotiations for phase two would begin. This would aim to see all the hostages released and all Israeli forces withdrawn from Gaza. Phase three would see the return of the bodies of murdered hostages and the reconstruction of Gaza. So here Israel, so close to total victory. Hamas, so close to having no options except total surrender. And now they're able to negotiate their way out of it, Hamas. It's just unbelievable. If you've followed us for very long, you know all about Judah's wound. The so-called peace process, we'll withdraw, we'll let them have their own state, have their own leadership. Well, what has that done for Israel? the past two, three decades. Notice this. This is further on in Richard Palmer's piece. It says, appearing on the Carolyn Glick show, Carolyn Glick's been on this program before, it says, historian Victor Davis Hanson pointed out that while the deal as we know it is terrible, it's unclear how much of it is Trump's responsibility or if we have the full picture. We're in a confusing transition time right now, and this deal may not reflect the position of the Trump administration. And then Mr. Palmer brings out some quotes from my father at thetrumpet.com. We all want peace, my father wrote, but sadly these recent peace pacts have a deadly flaw. That's what you've been hearing and you've been reading at thetrumpet.com for years. I mean, this is the message that Herbert Armstrong took to world leaders during the 1970s, during the 1980s. He was labeled an unofficial ambassador for world peace. We've got a booklet here that goes by this title, The Ambassador for World Peace. If you don't know much about Herbert Armstrong's ministry or the incredible, miraculous doors that swung open for him to a nobody going back to the 1930s, just minding his own business in the peaceful Willamette Valley of Northwest Oregon. And then God brought him to the point of repentance and backed his ministry for 50 plus years. And he was crying aloud, as Isaiah 58 says, and going to world leaders and saying, look, this world is not going to be able to obtain peace. But a peaceful utopia is coming. And then he would talk about the wonderful world tomorrow. And you saw the tagline there from that intro, the cold open, the world tomorrow. That's what he titled his program. There's a segment from that show where it talks about these doors that swung open for Mr. Armstrong to be given audience with the elites of the world at that time. Here's a segment, play clip 5.
In 1967, a remarkable door was opened for Mr. Armstrong to begin to reach some of the most important and influential men and women in the world. For almost 20 years, Mr. Armstrong traveled thousands of miles, meeting with kings, emperors, presidents, prime ministers, and leaders of many nations. The walls of his study are lined with mementos of those visits, gifts from the leaders of nations great and small.
I probably have visited more heads of government in their own offices than any other man. What do I talk about? I talk about the conditions that they're confronted with. I talk about world conditions and problems, problems that are far greater than they themselves are able to cope with. I talk about the cause of these conditions. I go as an ambassador, an unofficial ambassador for world peace, and they receive me as an ambassador for world peace. But I have to tell them why we don't have peace. I have to show them how peace is going to come and why we don't have it. And you know, that makes sense to heads of state. They're practical men. They see these things about them all the time. And they begin to listen when I talk about those things. Do I talk about the kingdom of God? Yes, I do. And God is going to intervene. Sometimes I tell them that straight out. They've called me an unofficial ambassador for world peace, and so I am. But let me say that there has to be a reason why we don't have peace. And you cannot have peace until there is something that will cause that peace. And there has to be a reason why something has caused us to have just the opposite of peace in this world today. And I'm afraid so many don't understand that. We do not have peace and will not have peace until human nature has been changed.
Mr. Armstrong was able to view the 20th century from a unique perspective. In his long life, he saw the coming of the inventions that made possible this modern age. The airplane, radio, and television, the computer, and space travel. Inventions that have changed our world, but not our thinking.
Invention. This was the tribute program, by the way, following Herbert Armstrong's death on January 16th, 39 years ago. His television department or staff put together this program looking back on this incredible ministry. And you see there, you hear from the narrator there at the end of that clip, the fact that we've had all of these modern inventions, all of this sophisticated technology, and yet the same nature, it hasn't changed our thinking. No amount of swapping prisoners or evacuating from Gaza is going to change the thinking of Hamas. In the end, they're still going to hate Jews. They're still going to want to murder Jews, the ones that are let out of prison, these Palestinian prisoners. They're probably going to want to murder Jews. We're not going to obtain peace, as he told world leaders. I mean, this is a message that applies today all the more so. My father wrote about this incredible history of Mr. Armstrong meeting world leaders. He wrote this back in, I think, 2016 or 17. He said, in the 1970s and 80s, one private citizen was jetting around the world and meeting with hundreds of world leaders. He met presidents, prime ministers, kings, emperors, princes, legislators, ambassadors, generals, officers, mayors, judges, scientists, educators, magnates, and executives. He talked with heads of state and heads of government in their offices at their invitations. Who was this man? Who was this man that met with all of the ruling class, pretty much, in the 70s and 80s. It says here, he wasn't a head of government. He wasn't even a government official. He wasn't a captain of industry. He wasn't even a businessman. He wasn't a billionaire or a millionaire. He was a man named Herbert W. Armstrong. Started with nothing in the early 1930s. Lived for decades in poverty. How did these doors swing open? It says here, Mr. Armstrong was a man who actually gave up his business to follow what he read in the Bible. If you give up this world and follow what you read in the Bible, miraculous doors will swing open. It'll happen with anyone who just puts their foot down and says, enough. What did Jesus say to his disciples? Follow me. Follow me and I'll make you fishers of men. Follow me and I'll lead you to the kingdom of God. I'll show you the way to peace. He followed God and lived for decades in poverty. He eventually led a church and a college. He did not seek to become a world traveler, a friend of prime ministers, an unofficial ambassador for world peace. Even if he had tried, he never could have achieved a fraction of what he ended up doing. I've been hammering away at this lesson with the students, particularly in Life and Teachings, but also in our weekly forums, that you've got to bring God into the center. There's a reason. There's a reason we're on this earth. There's a tremendous purpose being worked out here below. And like Herbert Armstrong said on one of his shows back in the 1980s, if you don't bring God into the middle of your life, your existence, and you're not realizing your incredible human potential, you're just wasting your life. This life is, I mean, look at how fast 39 years goes by. I told the students this morning, they're watching a 1997 Behind the Work film. That's 27, 28 years ago. And they're not old enough to remember some of these events. So they got to go back and, study Mystery of the Ages. Study this booklet, Ambassador for World Peace. Study Raising the Ruins, about the fight for Mystery of the Ages and the rest of that literature. That's their history. God, over and again in the scriptures, says that we've got to remember, we've got to make it part of us. We've got to internalize it, make it part of our heart, our meditation, our whole focus and aim in life. What Mr. Armstrong did in the 1970s and 80s was nothing short of miraculous, my father wrote. Nothing short of miraculous. So why did God open those doors for him? Why did God want that message to go out to world leaders at that time? Why did God raise up this work during the days of Herbert Armstrong from virtually nothing at all? It was God's work. And because of it, it grew and it grew and it grew. Let's just, maybe we can skip ahead to the one about the small beginnings. This is clip two.
Herbert W. Armstrong was one of the pioneers of religious broadcasting. His voice was first heard on the air in 1933 when he was offered 15 minutes of airtime on station KORE, then broadcasting with only 100 watts to the towns and villages of the Willamette Valley in Oregon. In later years, Mr. Armstrong would often reminisce about his early experiences in broadcasting.
Then, in October 1933, I had an opportunity to go on the local radio station 5 mornings for 15 minutes. It was free time, and they couldn't get ministers and local churches to take the time, and so I was able to get it, and of course I didn't have to pay for it. Now, that led to the radio church. There was quite a lot of mail coming in, and the manager of the station asked me then to start a regular Sunday program. And so the church went on the air, and I did the speaking on the first Sunday in 1934. That was the beginning of the what we call then the Radio Church of God. February 1st, the Plain Truth came out with its first issue, mimeographed. Only about 350 copies were made.
Although Mr. Armstrong did not realize it then, those first broadcasts and the first mimeographed copies of the Plain Truth magazine were the beginning of what was to become a worldwide work to fulfill the great commission that Jesus Christ gave his church.
A day of small beginnings, those images. But then look at the long view. Look at what it became. God says in Zechariah 4 and verse 10, don't despise those small beginnings. Herbert Armstrong in his autobiography, I should have brought that up here as well. you can get the whole story. It's like I told the students last week. Look, get autobiography, get Malachi's message, get Raising the Ruins, and get to know your history. Everything we offer on this program, we offer just like Mr. Armstrong did, without cost or obligation. We're here to give you the truth of God, to give it freely to this world, to sound the alarm, to cry aloud, to talk about peace, to talk about human nature, to talk about what's wrong with mankind, and to talk about God's solutions. You've got to be prepared, though, like Mr. Armstrong was, to give up the world and the ways of this world, and to follow and obey what you read and study in the Bible. Mr. Armstrong mentioned the program that he started. 15 minutes, he wrote in writing about some of that history. He said the local ministers didn't want the free time because it was too early in the morning. And Mr. Armstrong was like, I'll do it if it's free. I'll get up whenever you need me to. And then that turned into a 30-minute show. And then the mail started coming in. And it was just him and his wife, Loma, those two doing the work. A mustard seed beginning. He didn't even have a car when he started out with his Bible campaigns or his public speaking campaigns. He was walking the Willamette Valley in Oregon. This is from his autobiography. He was on his way to one of these public speaking campaigns in the fall of 1933. And someone came up to him and shouted, "You're not going to get far. You're preaching the straight truth of the Bible. That offends people. The Bible is like a sharp two-edged sword. It cuts, it reproves, corrects, rebukes." He's right. Well, the skeptic was right about that. People won't support that kind of preaching. You won't get far. That's what this man, this critic, said in the fall of 1933. And look at what happened. Mr. Armstrong said about this exchange that he had, "But I was not relying on the support of people. If people paid me, I would have to serve the people. If I were to serve God, I would have to look solely to God for support. Of course, God does work through human instruments, but I had to rely on God to lay it on the hearts of people to support the kind of preaching that obeys Isaiah 58 and verse 1. Cry aloud, spare not." He also often referred to John 6:44. "No man can come to me except the Father." Draws us to Christ. So he, for his part, he was crying aloud like the prophet Isaiah and leaving it to God to work on the minds, the hearts of men that would hear the World Tomorrow program or watch it on TV or read the Plain Truth magazine. Most people, of course, don't respond. He had millions and millions of Plain Truth readers. I think in the end there were over 100,000 that attended the Worldwide Church of God services. So that's pretty big by today's standards, certainly when compared to our church, the Philadelphia Church of God. But millions and millions of people were reading the Plain Truth, and just a handful responded to the message. Even fewer have responded to God's message today. But then, you know, you look at Behind the Work, the film that we played in 1997, and you see all that's happened since. You see all the growth. You see the growth behind me with the image of the Armstrong Auditorium, named after Herbert W. Armstrong. You see the magnificent campus here in Edstone, our UK campus. And then you see the work. You see the growth. You see the changed lives. He raised up the college, by the way, Ambassador College, in 1947. I think they broke ground on Ambassador Auditorium. The fires came up pretty close to that structure in Pasadena, California. It's interesting, as I told the students, how, you know, you're seeing Pasadena in the news right around this time, this anniversary time of Herbert Armstrong, his death 39 years ago today. I think they opened the doors to this facility in 1974, brought in performers. You talk about more open doors and just miracles. They brought in performers, world-class performers from all over the world. And of course, the church had its weekly Sabbath service in that structure as well. I'll get to, if we have time today, I'll get to some of the history. that's not so good following his death. But suffice it to say, I mean, you can see this in Raising the Ruins if you want to order a free copy. I mean, he was the best known televangelist of his day. If you just look at the numbers in the 1980s, I point out in Raising the Ruins that, you know, Time Magazine had this big feature, this feature story on all of the most prominent televangelists in the 1980s. And they rattle off all these names and they don't even mention Herbert Armstrong. That's because they wanted to pretend that he didn't count. Because, well, he had some unorthodox teachings and he wasn't really in the mainstream of Christianity, so we'll just ignore him. We'll just ignore the one that was on 400 plus television stations worldwide and that had a magazine with a circulation that was bigger than Time and Newsweek combined. They ignored him? That's what Satan would prefer. Just ignore Christ's representative on earth. Just pretend he doesn't exist. Just get people focusing on other things. A world filled with distractions. And there's plenty of religious distractions as well. There's something for everyone, right? I mean, this is Satan's world. That's what 2 Corinthians 4:4 says. The whole world is deceived. That's what Revelation 12:9 says. So if you look into the Bible and you believe it, I mean, you have to come with that message. Satan is the god of this world. And just understanding that alone opens your eyes to quite a few things. As you see, well, I guess that's why we just have so many wars. I guess that's why we can't make peace. Here is this horrible negotiation, whether it's pushed by Biden or Trump or both. What a terrible deal for little Israel. So close to an overwhelming victory. And now evidently ready to pull back and let the terrorists and the organization survive. This next clip from that 1986 World Tomorrow tribute program just talks about the phenomenal growth of that work during Mr. Armstrong's ministry. Clip 3.
Mr. Armstrong himself wrote in his autobiography, "At last, in the light of fast-developing world-encircling events, it became apparent what was actually happening back in 1934 was precisely this. Jesus Christ was opening the gigantic mass media door of radio and the printing press for the proclaiming of his same original gospel to all the world."
Today, my friends, we are in the time as foretold by Jesus when he said that this is the beginning of sorrows. Just the beginning of trouble and of sorrows in the world today. And so again today, my friends, I want you to notice first Jesus' Olivet prophecy found in the 24th chapter of the book of Matthew. Matthew 24.
It was a small and humble beginning, but like the proverbial grain of mustard seed, the work was destined to grow. By 1944, the World Tomorrow radio program could be heard throughout the United States. In 1953, it went on the most powerful station on Earth at that time, Radio Luxembourg, broadcasting to the British Isles and the continent of Europe.
The World Tomorrow.
The World Tomorrow first became a television program in 1955, when television was a relatively new medium.
Broadcaster and editor Herbert W. Armstrong reveals the startling significance behind today's world troubles with the prophecies of the World Tomorrow.
Later, Mr. Armstrong was to make many telecasts from the studio of the World Tomorrow in Pasadena, powerfully proclaiming the gospel of Jesus Christ.
We are not the same thing he did. If Jesus Christ were here today, he would preach the same thing that you hear me preach. Look into your Bible. Don't believe me. Look into your own Bible, and you'll see that everything that I'm telling you comes right out of the Bible. It is God speaking, and it is the very message of God.
one of the best known, most prominent religious leaders of the 20th century. You're looking at him right there. Herbert W. Armstrong. He forsook the ways of this world, looked into the Bible, and started to proclaim the teachings of Jesus Christ. As he said there, if Christ were here today, he'd be saying or preaching the same thing you hear me preach. His magazine, his flagship magazine, The Plain Truth, by the time of his death, 1985, 1986, it had a circulation of 8.4 million subscribers. And Time Magazine, that was the largest news periodical of the day. That was back when magazines were quite popular. Time Magazine had a circulation of 5.9 million. Not even close. Not even close. This is from Raising the Ruins. One out of every 583 human beings on Earth received the plain truth during the mid-1980s. In the U.S., it was 1 in 48. In Canada, it was 1 in 27. There are people, even today, just like Time Magazine back in the 80s, when it said, oh yeah, there's all these popular televangelists, and they don't mention Herbert Armstrong. They pretend he didn't exist. A lot of people knew about him. A lot of people followed him. A lot of people read his materials. A lot of people, millions and millions, watched his programs. Listen to this again about the growth of God's work during that era. This is clip four.
As the World Tomorrow program began to be heard worldwide, the Plain Truth circulation also began to grow. First in thousands, and then in millions. The Plain Truth is unique among the world's mass circulation magazines, carefully analyzing the real meaning behind the news of the day, foretelling trends in world events with an accuracy that is based on the prophecies of the Bible. New languages were added over the years: German, French, Spanish, Dutch, Italian, and Norwegian. Today, The Plain Truth has a circulation of 8 million, with readers in nearly every country on Earth. Mr. Armstrong remained active as editor-in-chief until the end of his life. He was present at the printing plant of R.R. Donnelly in Glasgow, Kentucky, when the 50th anniversary edition of The Plain Truth rolled off the presses. This 50th anniversary edition is still sent as an introductory copy to all new subscribers.
That's from the Herbert Armstrong tribute program, the World Tomorrow tribute program, that played all over the world in the weeks that followed Herbert Armstrong's death. January 16th, 1986, 39 years ago. As followers of Herbert Armstrong know, he wrote multiple books. I think the most popular booklet that he produced is one called The Seven Laws of Success, which we also battled over in court to win the rights to that little booklet. That went to 3 million people around the world. This book right here, I've mentioned it quite a lot recently, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. This was one of the first things that he wrote in his ministry back in the 1940s. This book went to 6 million recipients worldwide, 6 million people. And of course, Mystery of the Ages was well on its way to going to more than that. I guess it actually did eclipse that. If you count the Plain Truth circulation edition, but as we know, some of us, that edition of Mystery of the Ages was corrupted by Laodicean ministers. I think what I'll do is just reserve some of the content and clips about Mystery of the Ages and some of the content that I have about the fight for Mystery of the Ages and some of the history that happened, the dreadful history of that Laodicean rebellion that followed immediately almost the death of Herbert Armstrong. But as I said, if you want to stock your library full of your history, then think about Mystery of the Ages. Think about Raising the Ruins. Think about Mr. Armstrong's autobiography. There might be a limit on how many pieces of literature you can receive at once, but that's a good place to start. Start with his autobiography. Learn about Herbert Armstrong's life. Learn about what he wrote, what he taught. Because like he said about Mystery of the Ages, look, this book will help you understand the Bible. That's how important Mystery of the Ages was. And he was pretty excited to hand them out to those sophomores. Those sophomores that are now in their late 50s, I presume. Still around, many of them. How many of them remained faithful to the teachings of Mystery of the Ages? Not that many. Not that many. We saw 95% of God's people fall away from the truth during that Laodicean rebellion. And most, as many as 99% of the ministers, the ones that really should have known better above all, they were trained in some cases by Herbert Armstrong. They went out to Ambassador College. These are wonderful blessings, as I was saying in Life and Teachings yesterday. I mean, God, through Christ, you read Matthew 6, which is this magnificent chapter about organizing your life God's way and putting the right focus on spiritual things and just appreciating spiritual riches and treasure like that you should, to just seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. And God will then add all the things. He'll take care of you. That's a valuable lesson to learn, particularly when you're young. But how many people really and truly let material things get in the way of their spiritual growth and development? How many people put physical things first instead of keeping the first and great commandment to love God above all else, above anything else in this world, to put God first in everything? That's the first commandment. A couple of emails that we can finish off with. This says, thank you and the crew for a wonderfully powerful and sobering message to end 2024. What an outstanding way to end the program as we approach the 100th anniversary of Herbert Armstrong's conversion. He was converted back in 1926 and 27. This viewer's right. We're getting up close to 100 years. 100 years for God's work, you could say. Another one here says, over 40 years ago, my father would listen to Mr. Armstrong's radio program, and he also had a subscription to the Plain Truth magazine. It says, during the war, he landed at Omaha Beach. They were the first armored division to cross the Rhine into Germany, liberating a number of the death camps. It says, before he died, speaking of his father, before he died in 1985, he said Germany would be back for a shot at the title, and those furnaces would be fired up again. Here's someone that was familiar with Herbert Armstrong's literature. And he said to his son, I mean, Germany's going to reemerge. Germany's going to come back, come storming back one last time. How did he know? How did Herbert Armstrong know? Because of what it says in your Bible. As I say, hopefully we can continue on with some of this material on tomorrow's show. That's all we have time for today's show. The fastest moving hour in broadcasting. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.